rules for January 29th, 2009. We have three public hearings scheduled and a work session, which is actually a re-referral back to the Senate President. I'm waiting actually here, well, as soon as the committee administrator gets back, I'll have her give an explanation. I believe Senator Walker is on her way. And so why don't you give a brief explanation? I'm going to actually open public hearings. I believe I can do this. Well, I know I can do it as a subcommittee of the whole, but I can also open public hearings on all three bills simultaneously.
Okay.
So you can go through an overview of the three bills, and then I'll go back to a public hearing on the first bill.
Okay.
I'll open public hearing on SB 330, 331, 337.
Okay. Senate Bill 330 requires the state initiative and referendum voters pamphlet to include the procedures for filing a complaint alleging any violations of election laws. It also requires that the voters pamphlet list the top five sources that spent the most money supporting a measure and the top five spending opposing the measure. And it requires that in order to determine that, the secretary shall draw information from the electronic filing system, and that should be done not sooner than 56 days before an election.
Okay. Yeah. Senator Walker, sorry to give you, let you get your breath. Yeah, we will move ahead, and I'll narrow the public hearing to SB 330. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. I'm a bit under the weather today. And which one? You opened a hearing on 330?
Right.
All right, because you've got three of my bills up today.
Yes.
I've just been prolific. All right. Senate Bill 330 is a recommendation, actually, from the Public Commission on the Legislature. That, you know, not too many other recommendations passed in the form of legislation, but I thought it was a good idea. And the reason for that is the bill would actually publish in the voter's pamphlet the complaints for filing, the procedures for filing a complaint. The former secretary thought that was a great idea. And I think it's a great idea because Oregonians don't always have access to the internet. They don't know how to use it, and some of those websites are not very friendly. So it's a simple process, a matter of putting something in the voter's pamphlet, and I believe there's no fiscal to that. The second piece of the bill would require publication of the five largest donors to a major or an individual on the ballot. And I think, again, that's an important piece to making sure we have clean and informative elections in Oregon. You can get that information on ORSTAR, the electronic financial system for Oregon, but I have to tell you, even as an experienced legislator who does her own CNEs, it's not an easy system. It's complicated to use. It's frustrating to use, and quite frankly, I don't like it. But nevertheless, it's very difficult, once again, for regular Oregonians who are not familiar with the system to find out who's spending all the money and where all the money is coming from. I think it makes a difference for Oregonians to know whether their ballot measures are being funded by out-of-state interests, such as Lauren Parks, or whether they're being funded by folks who live within Oregon and really care about what's going on in the state. I realize the number of days that I've chosen to have it published in the voter's pamphlet, 56 days out, is arbitrary. Legislative Council indicated so. And so the Secretary of State would actually have something to say about that. I suspect it will depend on the publication schedule of the voter's pamphlet. But what I will submit to you is that even though we publish that information in the voter's pamphlet, I think you will see a change in how political action committees and individuals actually donate to campaigns and to ballot measures, because they'll just wait. They'll funnel a little bit of money, and then they'll wait until the deadline passes for publication of the voter's pamphlet, and then that's when you're going to see the gobs of money start coming in that we typically see. So it's not going to resolve all of the problems that I see in our system, because quite frankly, we need campaign finance reform. But this is just a small piece to tackle that problem. That's all I have to say.
Senator Walker, can I ask what your preference would be? Because I know you're very busy this morning. Would you want to do your testimony on all three bills, or would you want to wait here through the other testimony on, you know, because I'll have people that will want to testify on each bill individually. Would you prefer to speak about all three bills simultaneously, or would you prefer to just to wait in the audience till the next bill comes up, or us call you back down?
Mr. Chair, I so appreciate you asking me that. Under normal circumstances, I would wait because I'm a prolific note taker and I want to know what folks are saying, but I'm going to have to watch it later because I really don't feel very well, and I would like to just get through the other two and then retire to my office.
Yeah, I was trying to be sensitive to what I was sensing was your current situation. So if you would, I will open the hearing also again on the other two bills if you would like to give the presentation on those.
All right, thank you.
And then I'll go to individual testimony on each bill.
We'll go to Senate Bill 331 next.
Can we,
if
Senator
you
Walker,
don't mind?
Have the committee administrator just
sure.
give an explanation.
Okay.
Senate Bill 331 provides that a person may not serve as chief petitioner of an initiative referendum or recall petition if that person has an outstanding obligation to pay and assess civil penalty relating to election misconduct.
Okay. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is what I call my Bill Sizemore bill, and I'm just going to be quite frank and blunt about that. I am really quite agitated by a couple of individuals in our state who make a significant amount of money running ballot measures on things that they find of significance, but the voters, by and large, do not. But it creates a problem. People have to spend a lot of money, and we have to spend a lot of time arguing about these things. So, there are things that we need to do to change our initiative system, and there are bills I've seen put forward this session to do that. But one of the things I thought about was if someone has clearly violated the law pretty substantially, and Mr. Sizemore has significant outstanding fines, they're still allowed to continue to be chief petitioner. And I just frankly don't think that should be allowed. I think the constituent who brought this to my attention, her original idea was to actually ban a person from being a chief petitioner for a period of time based on the number of violations that they have. And that didn't make it into my bill. But if we go forward on the bill, I'd probably make that adjustment. I do want to alert you, however, to an opinion I got from legislative counsel on this bill. And I suspected the case and informed the constituent about the potential constitutional issues, but the constituent wanted to go forward anyway, and I just sort of wanted to lay down the gauntlet and just let people talk about it. So if I might be able to read the short paragraph from Legislative Council
yes.
into the record, thank you. Legislative Council states that Section 1.4b, Article 4 of the Oregon Constitution says that initiative and referendum measures shall be submitted to the people as provided in this section and by law not inconsistent herewith. Obviously, if a state law imposes too heavy a burden on the right of the people to exercise their initiative and referendum rights, the law may be invalidated as being inconsistent with Section 1, Article 4. It is difficult to say where the line between permissible regulation and a law that is inconsistent might be. LC 1730, which is now Senate Bill 331 before you, could be attacked as unconstitutional under the Oregon Constitution because it restricts the rights of petitioners. So I suspect there may be a healthy debate in your committee today about that. We're constantly, Mr. Chair, you and I have been in this building a long time together, and you and I have both been concerned, as some of our other colleagues, about the initiative system and preserving it for Oregonians for what it was meant for, and not really as a playground for someone to just throw a bunch of stuff out there and see where it lands. So that would conclude my testimony on 331.
And then an explanation on 337.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 337 does a number of different things. I'll group them into four categories. The first section requires the Oregon Supreme Court to rule on a ballot title petition within 45 days after oral arguments or after all memoranda have been filed, whichever is later. Section 2 requires the Secretary of State to review a signature twice before approving or rejecting it. It also directs the Secretary to conduct signature verification training for persons reviewing signatures and allows persons to watch the signature verification upon request to the Secretary. In Section 3, for purposes of determining the number of registered voters eligible to vote in certain local taxing district elections, persons may challenge the active registration status of an elector who did not vote. This deals with the section of the Constitution that provides that in order to levy in certain taxing districts, 50% of the eligible voters must turn out and vote to approve that levy. And if a county clerk concludes that the elector's challenge was correct, then that person may not be counted in the total. Section 4 requires the Secretary of State or Attorney General to respond within 90 days when they receive an election law complaint. It also requires that they notify that complainant if additional time is needed to determine if a violation has occurred, and then requires that the entire the investigation wrap up and within 1 year after receipt of complaint, except for criminal penalties.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it occurred to me I probably should restate who I am at the beginning of each of these, since they are separate hearings. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. Senate Bill 337 is actually a sort of a hybrid of a bill I introduced in the 2008 session, which was Senate Bill 1083. That bill received a pretty full hearing in the Rules Committee at that time and was sent to Ways and Means, where it did not resuscitate itself. I will tell you, I provided you the fiscal from last session on this bill, and even though I've taken some elements out, I don't think that really impacts the fiscal all that much. And given the economy, the state of the economy, I would probably say at the outset this bill is going nowhere because the fiscal was about $320,000. At least the elements that are going to cost money will probably have to just be taken out of the bill. I think they're good public policy, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, but in this economy, I don't know where we would find the extra money for the Secretary of State's office to implement these. But let me go through them anyway in case there's a miracle that happens in the meantime. Section 1, as your committee administrator indicated, requires the Supreme Court to certify ballot titles within 45 days. I've had someone stopped by my office in recent days and say, well, we just don't think that's a good idea because it would allow other matters before the Supreme Court to go to the back of the line. And my response was, well, the Chief Justice doesn't have a problem with this provision, so I really don't care that you think there's a problem, because the Chief Justice directs the Supreme Court. He's the Chief Judge of the Supreme Court. Really why I'm introducing this is because we have ballot titles that languish at the Supreme Court for a long period of time before the matters are resolved. Now, some organizations in this state are happy to have that happen because the longer it takes to decide on a ballot title appeal, well, all the better, because that's fewer days that anyone can go out there and collect signatures on a petition. But I think our system should be fair to both sides. And I know that in the 2008 session, there were whispers behind my back that were sent to various folks that this was a bad thing because it was going to help people get out there on the street sooner with their initiative petitions. But I think there must be balance in the system, and that is why I've included that in this bill. Section 2 moves the signature, and there, by the way, there was no fiscal to the Department of Justice for Section 1 of the bill, at least not in 2008. Section 2 moves the signature verification process into the Secretary of State office and requires two levels of review. This provides for standards and consistency that do not exist currently because these petitions are reviewed at the county level with the county clerks. And I looked through the testimony from 2008, and one of the clerks testified that we own this process, and this is our process, and don't take it away from us. Well, they don't own this process. And quite frankly, the Lemons case, Judge Mossman decided in 2008, made it very clear that we have a problem in Oregon where we have inconsistency in how we deal with signature verification. As you recall, the Lemons case was brought because there were certain folks in Oregon who did not like the domestic partnership bill the legislature passed, so they attempted to get it referred to the ballot and failed in obtaining the proper number of signatures. They sued the Secretary of State. It went to court. And I just want to read for you on page 10 of Judge Mossman's opinion. He says about the signature verification process, if there's anything that should trouble the Secretary of State here, it's the difficulty the state has had in actually articulating the standard to be applied to these differing judgments in different counties. And most editorial boards agreed with that opinion and felt that we needed to do something about the signature verification process. Moving it in-house, I believe, provides for that standard and the standards and consistency. It provides for training by rule, and I think we can get it done much quicker. I think that it would be appropriate to bring that in-house, but in this climate, it may not be something we want to add to the Secretary's budget at this time. So I'll move on to Section 3. Section 3 of the bill allows electors to challenge whether an elector is an active voter or not. This helps address the double majority problem that we have, but as you know, we passed ballot measure 56 in the November election in 2008 that helps us a little bit more with a double majority, but I think this gets us there even quicker. Section 4 is the 90-day complaint timeline. This, too, will add costs to the Secretary of State's budget because they will have to add investigators. If I recall from the fiscal, they said they would have to add two investigators. But, Mr. Chair, I believe this one is one of the most critical pieces of what we should add back to the budget of the Secretary of State. They take months. They take years to resolve complaints. This is not how we should have government working. And I know that you will hear testimony today. I anticipate you will hear testimony today from folks who have had complaints outstanding for over 2 years. So this requires the Secretary of State to make a decision within 90 days of receipt of a complaint and notify the elector in writing why they can't meet that 90 days, and they can have up to a year to resolve the complaint if they cannot do it within 90 days. In my discussions with the Secretary's office in the 08 session, they needed sometimes longer than 90 days because they had to gather evidence. But for the most part, it's just simply that they fail to process these things in a timely manner. And, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding some members of the legislature were sent notices at the end of the year saying they had civil penalties for mistakes they made in their filings that were years old. And I don't mean 2 years. I think they went back even longer than that. This is unacceptable. In the heat of a campaign, when someone makes an election complaint to the Secretary of State's office, this needs to be resolved during that election cycle, not after, but during. So I think this is good government for the people of the state of Oregon, and if we do nothing else to add to the Secretary's duties from this bill, I am certain that this one is the most important, at least for me and for good government in Oregon. So that would be my testimony on Senate Bill 337 and why I brought that one forward, Mr. Chair. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Senator Walker? Yes, Senator
Manchin. Well, I guess, a question specifically, Senator Walker. You talked about the first element of 337. The one, that your third element, which is the registration status of elector to challenge, that would be at the local level. So I would assume there's no fiscal with that one either. Those two elements weren't part of the fiscal, because I don't have the fiscal that you mentioned, that items 1 and 3 probably would not have a fiscal impact.
I believe you're correct, Senator. I did review the fiscal this morning, and the fiscal really was on the extra staff that would be needed for the Secretary of State's office to review the signatures in-house and then to process complaints within 90 days. I'm almost certain I left that element in Senate Bill 1083, but now as I look at the fiscal, I don't see any discussion about it. The question that you're asking me about challenging the electors, it may be, I know that I had to take some things out because people were giving me some fits about it, and it may be, Senator, that I actually did take that out before it went to fiscal, but it still, I don't believe, would encounter a fiscal. I think that would be pretty low budget.
I guess just an observation, since Senator Walker will be leaving, is that, you know, I'm very interested in items 1 and 3. I understand what Senator Walker is saying. I might mention 2 and 4, but realistically, you know, won't go anywhere because of the others, but those areas that might improve election law that aren't going to have a fiscal, you know, I would be interested in pursuing.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair and Senator Metzger, you know, because you and I had experiences in 2008.
It was
fun. These sorts of issues resonated with the voters when I spoke about them. All of these bills actually resonated with the voters when I spoke to them. And so I'm following through on my commitments that I made to enact these changes to our statutes so that we can have a better system that works for everyone.
Senator Burke.
Maybe I misunderstood. Did you say there was a fiscal on Section 4 on the complaint piece?
Oh, yes. Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Burdick, there was, because they anticipate having to add two positions. It says here in the fiscal, SOS also estimates an additional two positions will need to be hired to meet the timeline requirements for investigating complaints. And I will tell you that the largest part of the fiscal, however, was the in-house review of the signatures. The fiscal office says, based on past history, roughly 3,400 signatures per petition would have to be verified. SOS anticipates having to hire and train 12 temporary staff and 3 permanent staff for the increased workload.
I'm referring to the part about how they have to respond to complaints within 90 days.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Burke, I responded to you in that. That takes two. And then I went on to add that the other significant cost was the extra piece for the signature verification, and that's where they have to add a significant number of staff. So that's why I said in my testimony, I believe if we're really looking at good government, the signature verification can wait because the staff is so huge and the cost to that. I'd like it, but ideally in this environment we can't. But if we can squeeze 2 additional positions to investigate complaints, that piece alone, I think, would do a lot to make sure that our system is more responsive to Oregonians.
And, Mr. Chairman, I also wanted to say, you know, I'm sure you're aware that the Secretary of State also has their own independent authority to make complaints. And with the ORSTAR system, I'm just wondering if you would be receptive to an amendment giving the Secretary of State a deadline for it. In other words, if you make a mistake and it's on ORSTAR, if they're going to exercise their independent complaint authority, whether they should have a deadline as well, so you don't get 2 years down the road doing the same thing over and over like some people have and then get caught with a bunch of repeat violations.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Burdick, I think that is an excellent, most excellent suggestion, because I alluded to that, that there were a flurry of violations, civil penalty assessments that went out as our last secretary exited office. And you are right. If you make, you know, post expenses and contributions the way that you think you're doing it right, and you don't hear from anyone for several months, you could be slapped with multiple penalties. And I think this system requires a timely response from Elections Division on those matters.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, if I can just comment, you know, my point is that people who are trying to do it right and fully disclosing should have some kind of assurance that they actually are doing it right by the fact that no, in other words, if a complaint is filed, I think there should be a deadline as to how many repetitions you can get, because once the, if someone is complying in good faith with the law, then it doesn't seem fair to wait until a whole bunch of occurrences have occurred and then, you know, then slap the hammer down.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Burdick, you're exactly right, and I will just give you an anecdotal story where I know of one of my colleagues who double reported either a contribution or expenditure, but it was double reported. It was reported once and then reported again because apparently they had forgotten they had reported it the first time. They were assessed a civil penalty by the Secretary of State for $10,000. And quite frankly, I believe these civil penalties need to be reviewed. They are way out of line. They are way over the top for people who are trying to do what's right. These are not people where we've seen in the past where they're trying to abscond with funds and do things that are improper. This is someone who double reported, simply double reported, and was assessed a $10,000 fine, and they paid it. Now, I wouldn't have. I would have fought that one all the way to the Supreme Court. But that gets into the larger issue of these fines and assessments, and I think there needs to be accountability in the Secretary of State's office as well as accountability for Oregonians.
Senator Walker.
Yes.
Senator Burdick.
We're getting off track.
I've exercised the prerogative of the chair and allowed this to go to a few areas that are not actually in the bill, but I felt I needed to allow people to do a little bit of venting, but we probably need to get back to the
all
bill
right.
at hand that's before us.
Mr. Chair, you're no fun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like I'm getting a little heated here anyway, so I do need to retire to my office and drink some more juice. But thank you for your time and attention today, and I look forward to the hearty and healthy conversation about these measures.
Well, thank you very much, Senator
You're
Walker.
Welcome.
Now, so the people in the audience are not surprised by the actions I'm going to take quickly. Chairs like to take advantage of when they have a quorum. So what I'm going to do is close the broad public hearing, go to a work session that's sort of a procedural work session, then come back to the public hearings on the bills. Yes. We're going to open that back up. Or these two? No, those are being just re-referred back to the president because they shouldn't have been referred here.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, sir.
That's all that I'm doing. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearings on SB 330, 331, 337, and I'm going to open a work session solely for the purpose of re-referring SJR 4 and SJR 5 back to committee by way of explanation before we take a motion. It has been the understanding and actually been largely the practice that bills that were in an area other than elections, SJRs, constitutional amendments that are in areas other than elections, go to the substantive committee that would deal with that area. And then ultimately, since they are an amendment to the Constitution, they would come back to this committee. These two bills were referred to us first in error, and they will go back to the President's office and be referred to the respective substantive policy committee in those particular areas. Do I have a motion on SJR 4 and SJR 5?
Mr. Chair. I move that SJR 4 and SJR 5 be referred without recommendation as to passage to the President's desk for re-referral.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Any objections to the motion? Okay. Close the work session. Motion passes.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question for you?
Yes.
The Rules Committee, do we still receive joint memorials directly?
Oh, we are going to get a lot of joint
but
memorials.
I mean, is that still the practice that we will get them directly?
I think we will get, if a joint memorial in terms of maybe if it's, you're referring to memorial in the sense of memorial for a person?
Yes.
We will get a lot of those. If it's a joint memorial that is like a joint memorial to Congress in terms of, I don't know about that question, but I know we are scheduled to get a number of memorials. I think on occasion, and this is obviously up to the Senate President, on occasion where a member that is sponsoring is on another committee, he may choose to refer it to the other committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we will back to public hearing, and I'm going to open the public hearings individually. We will go to Senate Bill 330. We have already had an explanation of 330. And I will go. We have one party scheduled to testify. Ms. Bayes, do you wish to testify at this time?
Good morning. Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brenda Bayes. I'm the Deputy Director for the Secretary of State Elections Division. I just want to discuss with you a few concerns as well as clarification issues regarding Senate Bill 330. Section 1 provides that the Secretary is to print additional information in the voter's pamphlet regarding sources who have expended the most to support or oppose a measure. It is important for the committee to understand that this will increase the cost of the pamphlet, depending on the number of measures filed for that election cycle. Subsection 3 provides that the Secretary obtain the information from the electronic filing system, which is ORSTAR, to determine the source of the information and provides a time frame of 56 days before the general or special election. It is possible that at 56 days before the election, there could be major expenditures made and contributions not yet disclosed. Committees would be in the 30-day reporting period, not the 7-day reporting period. So we just wanted to make you aware of that issue. However, we don't recommend that we make the deadline closer to the election because it would be hard to produce the voter's pamphlet as it gets closer to the election. Also, the bill should be clarified as to whether this would include independent expenditures in determining the largest contributors. It could be interpreted that the bill applies only to direct in-kind expenditures. And finally, we have noted that the bill only addresses a general or a special election but does not include any measures that may be referred by the legislature for a primary election ballot. These are the only concerns our office wanted to address to the committee today, and if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so.
Just by way of clarification, I believe this is the bill that also has the provision regarding information to voters about the complaint process. Does the Secretary of State have any position on
it? Chair Devlin, members of the committees, it's fine to add that information in the voter's pamphlet. We would be happy to do so.
Okay. Questions? Yes, Senator Metz.
A question and a comment. I understand your points about the 30 days and all that was all are legitimate. I guess I'm I don't quite understand why there would be a fiscal impact of any significance under ORSTAR. I mean, if this were to go forward with a specific date, you know, whatever it is on this date, I mean, I can get on my computer and I can pull up the 16 ballot measures and the aggregates, and within a few hours I'd have them all, you know, done. So I don't understand that part. If you could explain that to me, why that would be a significant fiscal, because I'm sure, you know, two of us could sit down in 3 hours under that system, find the five biggest contributors at a given date in time. Understanding what you said, that we may not have them all because of the third day, but at least under the bill we could do that. Why would there be a fiscal on that?
Sure. Chair Devlin, Senator Metzger, it's really not a fiscal to getting the information from the ORSTAR system. It would be an adding pages depending on how many measures were filed for that election in the voter's pamphlet, because you would print the information in the voter's pamphlet.
Right.
It could add some pages, and in the newspaper world, you can't just add a page, or it's four pages at a time when producing the pamphlet.
Yeah, if I can continue,
yes.
Mr. Chair. I understand that. I'm just saying the way I read this is that you're just going to have five little lines that are going to say, you know, Oregon Education Association, Gun Owners of America, or whatever, Bill Jones, Esquire, and that's it. I mean, it doesn't require additional information. It just says who they are. But what, is this our only testimony on this bill, Senator Devlin?
Yes, 330.
Well, because of that, I would just say for the committee, I really appreciate what Senator Walker's been bringing this forward, what the intent of it. But I believe it's not practical. It's counterproductive. because any of us have been involved in elections, when the voter pamphlet goes to print 60 days before the election, you don't see the real money that's going to be on that measure. It shows up 3 weeks before the election. And so it actually would be counterintuitive. I think it would give voters false information, because they would look at the top five and they'd be some innocuous small amount of money and making it think there's no big money behind it, because of real time versus printing time isn't the same. And it's 3 weeks before the election where the $100,000, the $300,000, the $200,000, the big contributors, and it would lure the voter, I believe, into a false sense of who's actually behind a measure, because no one puts that money up 2.5 months in advance. That's the whole purpose of it, is on a measure like that, is coming as late as possible. So the intent is good. But unless the voter's pamphlet was a living online document that changed day to day, I just think it would give false information to the electorate. So,
and Senator Metzger, that probably would be true both in the case of proponents of the measure and opponents of
absolutely.
The measure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Any additional questions? I have no one else signed up for 3 to 30, so I will close that public hearing. Do you want to stay in place?
Yes, please.
We will go to SB 331. You're the first person to identify. We already have an explanation of the bill on the record.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Brenda Bays, and I'm the Deputy Director for the Secretary of State Elections Division. My comments on Senate Bill 331 are very brief. It's just not clear in the bill whether this would apply also to local initiative referendum and recall petitions, or if it would just be the state initiative referendum recall petition. We just wanted to bring that forward to the committee.
Okay. Any questions?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I'm just wondering if there's a way, because you can be a chief, you can be the sponsor and the author of an initiative and get other names on as chief petitioner. So is there any way you could hone in on the people who are actually, in other words, is that a loophole that we couldn't deal with, that we couldn't cover on this, or is there some way to cover that loophole? For example, if I wanted to put a ballot measure on, you know, giving Senator Atkinson $100,000 for life, but I didn't want my name associated, so I get Senator Devlin and Senator Metzger to be the chief petitioner.
Well, let's not get lost in detail.
but I'm really the ringleader of the thing. Is there any way to get at that?
Chair Devlin, Senator Burdick, I really don't see a way to get to individuals that may be involved in an initiative process where their name was not submitted to the division as a chief petitioner. Petitions can have up to 3 chief petitioners listed in their initiative petition, and as we know, there are others involved in initiative petition processes that are not listed as a chief petitioner.
Mr. Chairman, this is a pretty typical method of some initiative sponsors, so I just think the bill is well intended, but I just don't think it would solve the problem.
Okay. Any additional questions? Hearing none, thank you very much. We'll go on to this next party to testify. Mr. Honeycutt, if you'd come forward. And Mr. Honeycutt, if you would identify yourself for the record, I believe you've also submitted written testimony. At least you've given it to me, and I believe the committee has it.
Well, I have not. I know there is written testimony that I think will mirror what I'm going to say. Yeah. Dave Honeycutt, President of Oregonians in Action. I signed up in opposition to 331. I think there's a pretty simple way to, committee is interested in moving this bill, there's some simple amendments that can be made that solve the problem. The difficulty right now and the reason for our opposition to the bill, and I use the, as I'm sure the committee knows, I have been a chief petitioner on a number of initiatives, and our organization uses the initiative process on fairly regular occasion. The concern is it's difficult to know from the language of the bill when it is that the financial, the outstanding obligation to pay a civil penalty arises. Is it at the time that the Secretary of State imposes the fine, or is it at the time that all appeals have been exhausted? I have a $250 outstanding obligation to the Secretary of State's office. They've proposed a civil penalty that we're now in our second year in the procedural process. We're now at the Court of Appeals, and ultimately, I think I'll prevail and won't have to pay that $250 proposed civil penalty. On the other hand, if under the language of this measure, I'm disqualified from becoming a chief petitioner at the minute the Secretary of State imposes the penalty, even if it's overturned, and then I think that's at least one of the reasons why Ledge Counsel says that this may have some Article 4, Section 1B problems. The second, and that can be fixed fairly fairly easily with some amendments to the bill. The second problem with the proposed bill, it doesn't say when in the process, if a civil penalty is imposed, that you could conceivably be disqualified as a chief petitioner. I can imagine a scenario where a chief petitioner is three-quarters of the way through the process of gathering signatures. A civil penalty is imposed at that point from the Secretary of State's office. If the civil penalty is imposed at that point, then the chief petitioner then can no longer be a chief petitioner. Then it's quite possible that a measure could be invalidated through the imposition of a civil penalty, you know, midway through the process, which would be particularly troubling if ultimately the chief petitioner challenged the imposition of the civil penalty and it was overturned by the Oregon Court of Appeals or the Oregon Supreme Court. That also, I think, is part of the reason why this has potential Article 4, Section 1B problems. Dan Meek submitted testimony that I just saw that I think that was back there on the table that I trust you all have. He suggested some amendments to the bill that would avoid the problems that I just talked about if those amendments were adopted. And I think they're solid amendments, and we would certainly support those. And if those amendments were adopted, we wouldn't have a problem with the bill. I think the underlying intent is well taken, and we're certainly not opposed to the underlying intent. It's just the problem with the language.
Any questions for Mr. Hennigan? Well, thank you very much, and I think all the members actually should have Mr. Meek's statements on the bills actually in their packets. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on SB 331 and open a public hearing on SB 337. Ms. Bays, if you'd like to return. Please proceed at your leisure.
Thank you. Chair Devlin, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Brenda Bays. I am the Deputy Director for the Secretary of State Elections Division. I wanted to discuss a few concerns as well as clarifications regarding Senate Bill 337. Section 2 would require that the Secretary of State verify all state initiative petitions instead of county elections official. This will require the Elections Division to add additional staff to accomplish this task and will create a fiscal for the bill. It also requires that a second review be done regarding accepted and rejected signatures on petitions. Currently, our office does a second review of any rejected sheets on the 1,000 signatures that are required to be submitted with a prospective petition. However, the second review does not include accepted signatures. If our office is required to also review accepted signatures, we would need to add resources to do so. In addition, there may be issues that arise because of the constitutional requirement that our office complete signature verification on initiative petitions within a 30-day time frame. This, of course, would depend on how many initiative petitions were submitted for signature verification. Subsection 8 provides that the Secretary prescribe by rule a training program for persons employed by the Secretary for purposes of verifying signatures. Our office currently provides county elections officials as well as staff within the Elections Division an opportunity to have signature verification training. Our office consults with Heather Carlson, who is a forensic document examiner, to conduct these signature trainings. In October of 2008, our office, along with Heather Carlson, conducted signature verification trainings with county elections officials around the state. And in addition, our office has provided counties with a directive, 2008-2,
signature verification standards that outlines the process to follow when conducting signature verification. This directive was provided mainly in part of the testimony in the Lemons versus Bradbury case regarding referendum number 303. Subsection 9 addresses following allowing observers in the signature verification process. Our office has always allowed observers to watch the signature verification process and have procedures in place to allow all interested parties to participate in this. Section 3 requires that county elections officials must allow for challenges by an elector to challenge the active registration status who did not vote in the election and exclude those voters from the eligibility pool. In the 2008 general election, Measure 56 was passed, which eliminated the 50% majority requirement for all elections other than March and September. This may be a resource and time issue for county elections officials to process these challenges during an election. Statute requires that counties must certify their election results within 20 days after each election. Section 4.3b requires that not later than 90 days after receipt of a complaint, the Secretary or Attorney General shall notify in writing the elector who filed the complaint if extra time is needed to make a determination. This added responsibility would increase current workload for staff within the Elections Division and may result in a fiscal impact. For example, in the 2008 general election cycle, our office received and processed approximately 8,000 complaints. The likelihood that the division would have to provide a notice to an elector who filed the complaint asking for additional time is extremely high. Most of the complaints filed with our office require extensive inquiries back and forth between all parties involved before a determination may be made. In conclusion, if you have any questions at all regarding Senate Bill 337, I'm happy to answer those at this time.
Okay. One thing, Ms. Bays, just my understanding is that the Secretary of State has actually requested in the budget, not actually commenting on the probability of receiving those funds, but has requested the funds to be able to do the verification centrally, and actually has requested some funds for additional investigative staff. Is that correct?
Chair Delvin, that is accurate.
Okay.
Yes.
No statement about the probability of you receiving those funds, but any questions? Thank you very much.
Unscathed three times in a row.
Thank you.
Ms. Meyer. Ms. Meyer, I was actually surprised you weren't here to testify on 331 also. So, please.
Chair Tuffel, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director of the ACLU of Oregon. So many bills. I am here to testify today in opposition to only Section 1 of Senate Bill 337. For purposes of full disclosure, I believe I was the person that Senator Walker referenced who stopped by her office to express our concerns the other day. This is the provision that requires the Oregon Supreme Court to rule within 45 days of a ballot title. Now, for purposes of ballot title, ACLU has been on both sides and for initiatives. We've been filing in support of initiatives. We've opposed them. We've filed ballot title comments, and we've not when we've received a decision by the Secretary of State through the Attorney General of a ballot title that addresses our concerns. This is really not about that dynamic. It's for us an issue about providing having the court prioritize ballot title challenges, which actually currently, and I tried to look, but currently are handled pretty quickly by the court. But to put those ahead of other cases, we don't have a process like we do in the U.S. Supreme Court where they have to rule in one term. So cases that are complex and very important to people can take a long time. We have had a case representing Portland Adventist Academy going on in the court system and the administrative process for over 9 years. So those kids who have their Sabbath from Friday night to Saturday night have been prohibited from participating in the basketball tournament. That is real people, real lives, and real issues. And we think those are as important as the ballot title process, too. So we think the court If you want to address the issues of the court moving quickly on things, that's one, but we oppose selecting out certain types of cases for expedited treatment. And so we would oppose this like we would any other sort of certain kinds of cases being expedited in a manner over others.
Question.
Mr. Chair, just a comment as a former petitioner. The court, either through their rules or through just custom, already expedites ballot titles. I mean, there's some kind of official or quasi-official system. It's not as quick as what's called for in this bill, but it's already going on.
Chair Devlin, Senator Burdick, for instance, I'm not even sure the rules allow, but they do not give oral argument. You file your papers, you're done. That's very different than almost any other kind of case before the Oregon Supreme Court, where you file your papers, there's a time period, then oral argument, and then a decision.
Oh, is that, Mr. Chair, to follow up, in my particular ballot title, there was oral argument.
Chair Burdick, Chair Devlin, Senator Burdick, when I first started as a lawyer, the first ACLU case I had was on a ballot initiative, ballot title, where I did do oral argument, and it was when it was shorter number of words at the time, and the court agreed with our argument, and so I was responsible for getting, quote, other provisions, unquote, put into the summary of the ballot title, which wasn't what we were arguing for. Actually, it's in substance. So, yes, about 10 years ago, there used to be quite an active docket of oral argument, but not lately. So,
thank you.
I've always been very proud of that first work
news
I did.
To me.
Ms. Meyer, since it's on the issue of ballot titles, what do you think about, because I know we're going to have legislation in this area, of there is some feeling about that, and you get give and takes from both sides and multiple sides on the initiative process on this, about going to more of a summary that would allow you to start gathering signatures while the ballot title process is proceeding, and ultimately you would have to have the ballot title, obviously, before you go to the ballot or at a certain point. But the trade-off in that would be to give the court more time, and the trade-off would be that people would be able to go to the doorstep earlier, basically. Do you know if the ACLU would have any position on that? And I'm not trying to ask you for an instantaneous opinion.
Sure, Chair Devlin. I would say here is my concern. The tool, the ballot title itself, is that's what voters see to understand what the issue is. And I think no matter what side you're on, you consider that important. You want it to be clear. I'm not sure who... I know in the past there's been some legislation or some discussion, and if it's up to the chief petitioners or proponents to prepare a summary that they then use to at the front end to collect, we'd be very concerned, because then you have some of the electorate making a decision to sign an initiative on a very important issue in potentially a manner that is not actually representing what the initiative does. So that would be the first concern, is whose summary and how many signatures can you collect? And just making this hybrid process worries us. I have seen initiatives filed now. I think folks who understand this process will see that right after July whatever of 2008, folks had filed initiatives for 2010. I think if we do look at the log, and it's been a few weeks, I don't know the number, we're up to about 30. Actually, it's been a long time since I've gotten notice of any. But right away, there were some. And I was looking at it, again, a few months ago. Decisions are really happening quite quickly. The court is turning these around. So people are having almost 2 years to collect signatures, which is a significant amount of time. You can start... Actually, I should clarify. I misspoke. They have filed the initiatives prior, I believe, to the July deadline. And I think they can go through the ballot title process. They just can't start collecting signatures. I'm just a little foggy on that, but I know that the system's moved up so that people are filing earlier and earlier, so they have that full two-year window to collect signatures. Yeah. We think that's a pretty healthy, extensive period of time to collect the signatures in Oregon. So I would have some concerns. I mean, I like the principle, the idea of trying to get out there quickly, but I'm not sure with the summary and that process we'd be comfortable.
Okay.
Does that kind of give you some
framework?
That
gives me a feel.
Okay.
Any additional questions?
Seeing none, thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Coming here today.
Appreciate your time.
I have no one else signed up. I will. Yes, if you'd like to come forward and identify yourself for the record. And if you are on, are you on SB 337?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm a senior staff counsel in the Office of the State Court Administrator. I apologize for not signing up, but I hadn't intended to testify until I read Mr. Meek's written testimony on this. Senator Walker's correct that we negotiated with her to have this provision put into a bill in the 2008 session. We spent a lot of time on it to make sure we got the wording correct, and I'm talking about the Supreme Court review portion of the bill, Section 1. Mr. Meek suggests that perhaps the review on the modified title should occur within 15 days. That's a new proposal in front of us. We don't have a position on it yet, but I'm pretty sure that both the Chief Justice and the Supreme Court would have grave concerns about that short of a timeline, and I just wanted to point that out to the committee as you go forward considering the bill.
Okay. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very
thank
much
you.
For coming here today. And if there's no one else, I will close the public hearing on SB 337. Committee members, this week we just tried to get sort of a feel on initiative reform issues. We had an overview on Tuesday. Three of the bills that I had in my possession, actually the only initial initiative reform bills that I had in my possession, were up for public hearing today. We have a lot of bills coming forward relative to the initiative process. I just wanted to try to get the committee to start discussing these issues because you're going to see more of it in front of you. We're not meeting this Friday. We will be meeting Tuesday and Thursday of next week. And you know, this is an interest of all of you out there. Not really. We will be meeting back again on SB 10 revisions. So we'll be all next week and probably the week thereafter. So with that, we are adjourned.
Yeah. Well, if you decide we gravitate towards your leverage.